Peter Armitage and I go back many, many years. I suppose we shouldn't be saying things like that, Peter, but at least we haven't gone completely gray. Guys our age seem to be nowadays, you've got a bit of color left in your hair. They think you're a lot younger than you are. But how's it going at Anchor? Before we go into everything, you've started the company, you listed it. It's a big operation now, but are you finding the expansion that was promised in the early days is fulfilling itself still?
Yeah, we're very proud of where we've got to, Alec. From a size point of view, we've got about 400 staff. We've got about 135 billion rand of assets. And, exciting is we've in the process of merging with PDUC, which is a 110 billion rand UK wealth manager. It actually comes from some South Africans who started it about 25 years ago. So it gets us to nice critical mass. And obviously everybody's happy at the moment. Every asset class is delivering good returns. It's been hard to not get a double-digit return this year.
Well, you certainly are bringing together two best-of-breed operators. I know the Credo guys very well, Dion Hoos, Jared Kahn, and they are out of the top draw, as are you guys at Anchor. So, one plus one might, in this case, make three. Congrats on that, Pete. When does it
in
go
France,
through?
We don't. We've got all the approvals, Alec. We're actually in the final, literally this week, completing the kind of transfer of funds and that kind of thing.
Excellent. Yeah. Well, but something interesting to kick off this, hopefully, which will be a regular chat, is about your profession, chartered accountancy. There was a comment yesterday made by the head of KPMG in the United States to say that he's fretting that there aren't enough young people coming into accountancy. And he's urging the accounting profession to make it easier for people to get into the profession there. 75% of CPAs, they call it there, not CAs as we call you here, but CPAs, are nearing retirement, 75%. And young people are not coming into the profession. And in that context, there was an announcement on SENS today to show that it's not just in America where accountants seem to be in short supply. Here's the financial director of Old Mutual. I don't know if you know the guy. His name's Casper Trotsky. I haven't met him. But he hit retirement age in April this year. They told us last year that he was going to be leaving in April this year. Then they came out and said, whoops, we haven't been able to find a replacement. So we're extending it till April 2025. Today they announced that actually we're extending it now to April 2027. I mean, there's a lot in that whole
story. Significant, yeah. Yeah, so I think the big organizations, it's very difficult to find somebody to take over the role, institutional memory. And being listed nowadays, you and I have both been there. It's a hell of a burden. And if you've got somebody who's doing the job well and they want to carry on doing it, I think those old days of replacing the CEO and the CFO every 5 years, it's just too short a time period. You build up your institutional memory. And there is a tied into what the US guy was saying, a lot of South African chartered accountants are going offshore. They're in big demand. They're considered of high quality. And I know, there's some practices here. We do business with quite a few accounting firms where they've got rooms full of people servicing and doing audits from South Africa for American firms because the cost and the quality. And obviously the attitude towards doing work online has changed dramatically in the last 5 years.
So interesting. I suppose that you would recommend it to a young person nowadays if they were looking to go into a area. Accountancy is certainly one place where they wouldn't be making a mistake.
Another interesting aspect for a young person is, it obviously gives you all the business basics, but a lot of people who want to land up at least having an overseas experience or immigrating from South Africa, typically the accounting firm's been a good way to do it, because they'll give you an internship or post your articles as part of your articles, give you some work overseas. So, that's the way we lose a lot of our guys. So they'll go and do a year in the US or articles in the US, post articles in the US, and then they'll end up staying. I think, and I heard some murmurings that in the UK has now changed, and the UK firms won't be allowed to bring South Africans in to do what they were doing. If you remember, young South Africans could also do a two-year, you know, it was quite routine to get a two-year work visa in the UK. So those loopholes are all being closed, not really loopholes, but rules. So, you know, that might keep a few more young South African chartered accountants here. But I think the job itself has become a lot less attractive because it's become, you know, the compliance, and every week or two, there's a new IFRS amendment, and, you know, accounting ain't what it used to be, as they say. You know, if you look at an income statement or a debtor's book or stock, I'm not really sure what it means anymore. It certainly doesn't mean what it used to mean. You have to make all sorts of adjustments and straight lining. And then in South Africa, well, globally, the rules got a lot stricter. Certainly post Steinhoff, my experience with the auditors when we were still a listed business is, you know, the audit intensity got significantly higher. And, you know, auditors have become much more liable for signing off things. So it's become, I guess, like a lot of jobs, but anything to do with compliance in the world over the course of the last 10, but especially the last 5 years, you know, the world regulators are really trying to tighten up on things.
Something else that's changed in the investment field or the financial field in South Africa is the companies that are listed on the stock exchange here. And it was interesting to me today to see an announcement coming from Mondi PLC, which we used to know many years ago as an Anglo-American subsidiary. It was listed on the JSE. Of course, it's spread its wings now. It's a 12 billion rand deal. 12 billion rand deal, 650 million euro deal. And it's just so far away from the interest area of South African investors because it's this offshore company and so on, that very little attention would be paid to that. It's quite sad in a way that we have these global companies now, no longer really much South African influence, that are still dominating much of the JSE. In your time, do you spend a lot of time looking at SA Inc. companies, given that they're the ones who should be benefiting from our improvement that we're all hoping for?
Yeah, I think SA Inc., depending on how you categorize it, is about 50% of the JSE, and banks are about 25%. So banks are about half of it. You then take out insurers. So kind of the more traditional non-financial services SA Inc. companies are probably around 20% of the market. And, you know, we're not a bulge bracket enormous asset manager like a Coronation or like Alan Gray. You know, there'll be five or six asset managers in the SA who have people intensely looking at something like a Mondi. But we'll tend to focus our efforts on areas that we think look interesting. You know, for the last 10 years, looking at construction companies was a bit of a waste of time in South Africa, and they all just went down in a straight line and delisted or went bankrupt. But obviously, as the South African scenario has changed, we've spent a huge amount of time starting about a year ago looking at SA Inc. companies. The valuations were very low, and it became clear that if there was some kind of trigger to unlock the GDP and subsequent earnings growth from these companies, there could be some big opportunities. You know, in you're now paying about a 28 multiple for a US company, and you're paying an average of 10 or 11 multiple for a South African company. So you're paying less than half. And if they can get the earnings growth coming through, there has been good money made. And this year, for the first time as Anchor, probably in 7 or 8 years, we've been more positive on SA assets than global assets, largely based on price and valuation. You know, the global prospects in America look excellent. But boy, you're having to pay up for those prospects. You know, things don't come cheap when they're looking good. And SA, you know, yet opposite scenario, things are looking quite dire. People didn't really care about the valuations. So, you know, we went in a blitz just before the election, interviewing 30, doing analyst visits with 30 of the South African companies that we thought could benefit, updated our knowledge on those. And, you know, we found a handful of companies that we wouldn't have invested in for the last 5 or 6 years, have performed very well and we think will continue to do so.
Can you share any of those names with us?
Yeah, the smaller companies, you know, obviously besides the bellwethers in the top 40s, Sun International, Southern Sun, Lewis, We Buy Cars. Afrimat is an interesting one. We've been invested in that as a smaller CSA company, more than mining space. Yeah, but those are the and famous brands. So companies that, you know, high quality businesses with long track records that were simply stuck because South Africa wasn't growing. And, you know, the interesting part is the government of national unity can look so clever because there's things besides them and the confidence levels that they're creating. And it's almost coincidental that will really benefit them. So the, you know, if you look at load shedding moving away, the economic cycle. So interest rates have just started coming down, which is a big boost. The two-pot retirement system will push 50 to 100 billion rand of money into consumers' pockets. So, you know, they've got all of these things that can really help them. So they're sitting in a good place if they can get it right. And obviously all the South African fund managers are cheering them on, hoping that, you know, the worrying headlines that you have seen every few weeks about the tensions and probably will continue to see until the end of this initial term of the GNU. You know, we hope that's just part of the growing up process.
Yeah. Please don't score own goals because you've got the wind from behind for a change. Eh?
Yeah, absolutely, on many fronts. Yeah, so you say it looks interesting and still quite cheap, even though there's been a fair bounce. But the foreigners haven't really... Foreigners have come big time into the bond market. The bond market is unemotional. It's a rate. They haven't really en masse come into the local market. I think they're waiting to see. You know, obviously, the government changes. These things will come. Interest rates change. The lives of people haven't really changed yet. But the prospect statements are a lot better. And interest rates coming down will have a real impact. Two-pot is a real factual impact. Investor confidence, which is what the government's doing, is improving that, really flows through in people wanting to hire people, spend CapEx again, you know, that make a lot of noise about infrastructure. So part of it we know will come through, and other parts of it we need to continue and give people continued confidence in where we're going. And look at this currency. We're at 1950 only a few months ago, got down to 1700. To 17 Rand. So that's probably the key question that clients are asking us is, you know, is it we're going out this week with a 16 Rand 20 view, 12 months out, which we wouldn't have dreamed of if you look back 6 or 12 months ago. You know, that's dramatic if you think about 10, you know, 1 Rand 70 is 10% of the currency. So it's 20% swings. So South Africans have got, besides anything else, they've got 15% more. You know, richer in global terms. And we obviously always encourage our clients to look at, view themselves as global investment citizens. And doing that in rands in South Africa has been profitable for the first time in many years.
I was interested to hear what you said about We Buy Cars, having had a conversation on that company with Walter Aylett last week. And his business has got, or their clients have got more than 5% of that company. But the one that's of interest today is Afrimat. The numbers that the trading update that came out showed that their profits are going to be down between 75 and 85% for the 6 months to end August. The share price dropped from 60, call it 66.5 to 62.5. And then very briefly, immediately rebounded. So I guess people like you who've done your work on Afrimat would have seen that although it's their worst 6 months coming up that they've ever had as a listed company, you're able to see through the noise.
Yeah, I think they've been quite good at communicating. And I think, you know, we've been heavily invested in it. Our clients have made a lot of money out of it. It's been a fantastic share to be invested in. And we communicate often with management, and I think they signal things quite well to the market. They're good at investor relations. They have investor days. And, you know, the story of Afrimat has been a fantastic management team. that's managed to get assets that other people have kind of lost interest in or not focused on, and really extricate value out of it. The previous 6 months had a very high average iron ore price, and the global iron ore price is low. But there's a lot of projects coming on stream, which will, you know, if you just base the kind of cumulative volumes of what they're producing. A year ago, we did the calc. That was 100. In 2 or 3 years' time, there's going to be 300. A lot of projects on the go, a lot of value being created, which isn't yet reflected in earnings. And, you know, what was particularly severe in this time period was actually not being able to sell the iron. So ArcelorMittal locally didn't buy for quite some time period. And then they've obviously had the export rail issues. And those are things which will reverse. You know, Arcelor got over their local issues. Rail is getting slightly better off a very bad base. But you've got their new projects and volumes coming through from other mines over the course of the next year or two. And then, you know, interestingly, they bought Lafarge for effectively 100 million rand. You know, that's an asset when it's humming. And if you go back 10 years ago, that was worth billions of rands. So if they, you know, they continually find these gems and opportunities. They're not without their risks because they're buying assets that other people haven't really been able to do well out of. It's not always that. You know, they've bought some stuff with their mining and getting stuff out the ground for the first time. But it's a management team that's got one of the best track records on the market over the course of the last 10 years. There'll be times when the things are out of your control that you can't you can't make better. But I think they've the share price reaction. I think for somebody who doesn't know the company and looked at what came out today, they would have expected the price to come up 25%. But I think it was. Obviously, when things are bad, companies don't give you inside information. We were not expecting the extent of the profit decline, but they've given the market the information and knowledge and picture of their business over the next 2 or 3 years. So we don't ultimately think the long-term value of the business has changed because of a very poor six-month period. And that's really what the market's telling you in terms of what the share price has done today.
Let's close off with something that is going to be worrying a lot of people very soon. According to SARS, there's 5.8 million South Africans who have an exposure to crypto. I didn't think that was possible. 10% of the population. Yeah. Scary number. But they say that a lot of these people have not been disclosing it and have been making money or using that asset. And now they want to warn people that if you don't disclose your crypto assets, you are going to be caught, not least because the finance ministers around the world are sharing information and they're signing an edict of some sort in November this year, which will enable that. I guess it's a very, very easy thing for you to advise your clients who do have crypto that they probably should be playing ball.
Yeah, I mean, any asset that you buy and sell, you're supposed to tell the receiver about. You know, I think the beauty crypto, certainly if you go back 5 years ago, was the currency of crooks and vagabonds. I think it's become a lot more mainstream. But it, you know, the beauty was that it was unregulated. And people kind of clapped and cheered when it became regulated. But with regulation comes the fact that it starts to get caught in the tax net. So I think, you know, I remember SARS more than a year ago, just saying there's no reason why crypto was different to any other asset that you bought and sold. So, you know, the issue is going to be for people the real money was made in crypto 5, 6 years ago. The real issue, and I guess the scare, is for people who've made a big profit over a few years and haven't disclosed it.
Yeah, well, it does appear as though it is impossible to hide from the tax man forever, indefinitely. And this is another instance where it would make a lot of sense to just play open cards. What does Warren Buffett say? Don't do anything that stops you from sleeping at night. I guess it's the same with what you do with your investing.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a look. I mean, yeah, we don't invest people's money in crypto because ultimately, if it went to naught, I couldn't explain to you why there was a fundamental value. There isn't. I saw a nice quote the other day. Somebody saying it's basically a supply-demand equation on nothing. At the moment, there's, you know, over the last few years, there's been more people wanting to get into it. It's become institutionalized. You can buy it as an exchange-traded fund. So the demand has been there. You know, it's an interesting asset class. What we say to our clients, if, you know, to have a few percent of your investable assets in it might land up being worthwhile. You've got to understand the risks inherent in it. You know, you talk about Afrimed's earnings going down by 80% in the 6-month period, but there's still earnings and there's still assets and there's still growth and dividends that will come out. If crypto, you know, if crypto went up 30% or down 30% in the next 6 months, nobody could really tell you why that happened, because there isn't that fundamental underpin. So have a bit of it if you want to. We're not going to invest clients' money in it. We think it's not, you know, the foundation of what we do is to invest in assets which we are very comfortable that we buy them at a fair price relative to the underlying value and growth prospects. And it's just far outside of that realm. So maybe we're being old-fashioned and more traditional. We like to sleep at night. I think the, you know, people have spent a lifetime making their money. That's something I like to say to people a lot is you don't have to make your fortune twice, or don't put yourself in a position where you have to make it twice. So, you know, to steadily compound the money that you put aside and invested is the prudent way to go. It's the approach that we have because it makes sense. Also, from a business model point of view, frankly, you know, it doesn't make, there's no benefit for it for any asset manager to take, to try and be the hero by taking outsized risks.
Peter Armitage is with Anchor. I'm Alec Hogg from BizNews.com.